In a logo, a snow-covered mountain stands majestically against a pink horizon. A row of white stars soars toward the mountain and forms an arch above its peak. Words appear, Paramount, a Viacom company.
Tonight was your first time at the club, wasn't it?
No, I've been there a few times before.
Really? Well, how come I haven't seen you?
I noticed you the first night I walked in. You always stand out.
Wow, thank you. Well, how come it took you till tonight to talk to me? You're not shy, are you?
Maybe a little.
As titles appear, some letters lower on threads. Paramount Pictures presents a David Brown Phase 1 production in association with Revelations Entertainment. Morgan Freeman as Alex Cross. Monica Potter as Jesse Flanagan.
You okay with this? Just taking her off with someone you hardly know?
I trust myself.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I believe in human nature. You know, that people are basically good.
You're right. Most people are.
Along came a spider. Michael Wincott, Penelope Ann Miller, Dylan Baker, Michael Moriarty, Mika Boren, J.O. Sanders.
Tracy, yeah. You spell that with a Y? R-N-I-E.
I-E. Guys are always assuming I'm a T-R-A-C-Y. Oh, I hate guys who assume.
Me too.
This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Justin Soule, Dutch Priest, Carrie Danahy, and Stacey Perelman. Read by Lynn McLean.
You look like a James.
Nope. Just Jim.
Oh, Jimmy.
No. Just Jim.
More titles. Billy Burke.
Oh, come on, you are shy.
Directed by Lee Tamahori. Now, a staticky aerial view shows a convertible heading down a highway.
Look, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. I think you got beautiful hair.
You think so?
Yeah.
Brown bag, this is Brown Bird. We have audiovisual.
Do you think it's sexy?
In a van, two men wear headsets.
Brown bag, closing to one click.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing sexier than short hair and a beautiful woman.
What is it about big hair that turns men on?
In the convertible.
What is it about big hair that turns guys on, anyway?
Now, a monitor shows the driver, Jim.
Bad taste.
Look at me. I want to see your eyes.
In the van, news clippings contain stories of slain women.
Innocent.
On the monitor, Jim smiles.
Just the way I like them.
That's him. That's our man.
Car is registered to a Jim Gelweg.
Brown bag, this is Brown bag. Move in.
The convertible passes a sign that reads Virginia Falls Dam. Jim runs his hand up Tracy's bare inner thigh to the hem of her dress. She grins. In the van.
He's testing Tracy. Tell him.
Her prompter has a gray goatee.
He's got the Midas touch.
Back in the convertible.
You got the Midas touch.
She runs her fingers over his hand.
That's because I'm God's gift to women.
As he reaches around her head, pulling her in, she resists. He finds a device in her ear.
What is this?
It's an earpiece with an antenna.
What the heck is this? You little witch!
Busted.
Brown bird, brown bag, move in. Take him now!
Pull your vehicle to the side of the road and keep your hands where I can see them.
Police! Pull over. Now! I got him, Alex.
Tracy aims a gun. As Jim hits the gas, it goes off, shooting him. The convertible careens over the side of the dam. As the car snags on some cables, Jim plummets into violently flowing water. Now the goateed man Alex arrives with his team. They see Tracy still buckled into the dangling car.
Call for help now!
Tracy!
Hold on! Don't move! Stay where you are! Stay still!
She looks over her shoulder at the drop. The convertible lurches.
Tracy! Hold on! We're gonna get you! Come on, guys! I'm out!
A cable frays. As it snaps, the convertible breaks free. It hits the wall of cascading water and slips. Alex stands frozen at the top of the dam, his arm outstretched, his eyes well with tears. Now, outside a stately three-story building, cars and pedestrians move across a wet driveway. School children approach the building wearing raincoats. A 12-year-old girl climbs out of a car.
Hey, Hannah.
Hi, Megan. I hope we don't have that big math test.
A boy gets out of a limo. Nearby.
Jesse. Hey, Megan.
Jesse. Guess you called me again last night.
Oh, let's see.
The boy approaches.
Good morning, Dimitri.
Hey, Megan. I downloaded some really cool gifts. You want to see them?
Yeah, sure. What are they?
Agent Flanagan.
Jesse signs a document for one of the Russians, then speaks into a wrist microphone.
Control, check in Strudabov and Rose.
Inside.
Check. Hey, Jess, what do we call the Ruskies these days? Russians? Former Soviets? I forget.
New World Order Divine. Get used to it.
In a classroom, computer monitors show a photo of an aviator.
Charles Lindbergh, Lucky Lindy, or the Lone Eagle, as he was called, is our subject today because he was the first man to... what? Megan?
Fly over the Atlantic?
Very good. First man to fly solo nonstop from New York City to Paris. And that was 1927. An astonishing accomplishment. Which brings us to today's assignment. Let's see which of you can navigate, or fly if you will, from our own page to our hero's website here in the fewest number of links. All right? And you're off.
As preteen students work at computers, the bearded teacher walks among them, eyeing their work through his wire-framed spectacles. Megan glances at him. In the back of the room, Dimitri's bodyguard sits reading a newspaper. The teacher leans over the Russian boy's shoulder, watching the student pull up an online article entitled, The Crime of the Century.
That's very clever, Dimitri.
As the teacher walks off, the boy glances at him. On his monitor, a photo of Michael Jordan pops up. Characters type out in another field, then flash over the photo. On Megan's computer, a window pops up. You have a message. She smiles as the photo of Michael Jordan appears, flashing the typed out characters. Glancing over her shoulder, she shares a smile with Dimitri. She shifts her eyes stealthily, then opens a photo of two nuzzling deer. Characters type out in the text field. Later, students bustle in the hall.
Megan, might I have a word with you?
She faces her friend Hannah.
Sam, you see it okay?
Okay.
Come to my office.
The bearded teacher leads Megan to a wood-paneled room with a flickering fireplace. He closes the door.
Take a seat.
They sit at opposite sides of a desk.
Now, Megan, you know I understand the particular pressures of your life. Father being who he is, and enormous expectation. All adds up to rather a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
But none of that excuses your breaking the honor code.
What?
All about you and Dimitri, Megan. We don't tolerate cheating now, do we?
Cheating? Mr. Stonji, there's been a mistake. We only pass notes, you know, jokes and stuff.
Megan, before you go any further, best have a look at that.
He hands her a report with a clear plastic cover. As she looks it over, he gets up.
Mr. Sonji.
Yes?
This essay, it isn't mine.
Beg your pardon?
He steps up behind her.
What do you mean?
He takes out a pen.
Oh, my. Oh, dear girl, I'm... dear.
Covering her mouth, he pokes the pen-like instrument into her neck. Megan grabs at his cheek, which rips. It's a mask. Now, in a cafeteria, Hannah sits next to an empty seat. Jesse enters and looks around. Back in Sanji's office, the teacher readheres the torn latex and fake beard. As he lays Megan's body on the floor, the door opens.
Harry, why is the door locked? Oh my God, what happened?
She's just collapsed. I'll tell you what, you stay with her. I'll get some help.
Okay, Megan.
He locks the door.
Hey, sweetheart, can you hear me?
He strangles her with a power cord. Back in the cafeteria.
Hey, Jesse.
Hi, Kyla. Hey, Hannah, where's Megan?
She's with Mr. Sonji.
In Sanji's office, the strangled woman drops. A laptop shows a video feed of a hall. Sanji packs it onto a computer cart. Several CPUs sit tightly packed on the bottom of the shelf. Sanji folds down their front panels, revealing a hidden compartment. In the hall.
Control, I'm en route to Sanji's classroom.
I'm sure it's just a meeting that went long.
Well, it's against procedure. Mr. Sanji should know better.
Back in his office, the teacher stows Megan's body in the hidden compartment, then closes the front panel. Meanwhile, Jesse and the school administrator head down a staircase. Now, as Sanji wheels the cart down a hallway, he puts a set of keys in his pocket. Meanwhile, Jesse and the administrator enter his classroom and find it empty.
His office.
They hurry off. Outside, Sanji wheels the computer cart across the parking lot. Back inside, Jesse and the administrator approach a closed door.
Mr. Sanji, Secret Service, open up.
Outside, Sanji opens a van door and lowers a ramp.
Mr. Sanji!
Jesse tries the doorknob and finds it locked.
Do you have a key?
Outside, Sanji rolls the computer cart into the van, then closes the door. Back inside.
I'm sorry, there seems to be something stuck in here.
Stand back.
Jesse draws a gun, then kicks the door. Meanwhile, Sanji drives past a checkpoint station. He waves at a guard. Back in the school, Jesse kicks open the door and discovers the strangled woman.
Controls shut down, stop all vehicles, lock on Sanji and Rose.
In the security control room, Divine draws his gun and runs off. Outside, Sanji casually drives his van onto the street. Two armed men in suits follow Divine as he races past the security checkpoint and aims his gun. Down the street, Sanji's van merges into traffic. Now, a tiny carved figurehead of a naked woman juts at the prow of a model ship. Two pairs of tweezers with angled heads tie a knot in a piece of twine rigging. Alex wears a visor with magnification lenses as he works on the model. A woman with dark, tied back hair brings over a coffee mug and sets it down on the table where he works. She sits, watching the gray, goateed man hoist a miniature sail.
Alex, it's been 8 months. It's time you forgave yourself.
Alex freezes. He puts down his tweezers, lifts the visor, and rubs the bridge of his nose.
Vicky, you know that forgiving yourself is the one thing a person cannot do.
Vicky kisses her hand, then touches his cheek. As she leaves, Alex stares off pensively. Now, a boat sits docked along a pier. A name on its stern reads, Sea Dreamer, spelled with the letter C.
We're currently trying to put the pieces together as to how and why this man would murder a teacher and kidnap a young student.
On board.
Here's a photograph of the missing student. Megan Ann Rhodes is 12 years old, blonde hair with hazel eyes. She's 3 feet, 5 inches tall, and weighs about 52 pounds.
Sanji removes a wig and pieces of latex from his face, revealing his gaunt jawline and short hair.
Information that senior FBI and Secret Service officials have arrived at the family home of Senator Rhodes.
Sanji discards his disguise in a trash bag. Later, he drops the weighted bag overboard. He heads below deck. Sanji picks up a handheld tape recorder from a table, then undoes 3 latches on a closed door. He opens it. In a padded room at the bow, Megan lies on a mattress upon the floor. Sanji holds the tape recorder to her mouth.
Please, I want to go home.
At Alex's house.
The FBI and police are on the lookout for this man, Gary Sonji.
A photo shows the bearded teacher. Alex presses the remote.
The 12-year-old daughter of Senator Hank Rhodes. How and why is on the mind?
Police are trying to find out who this man really is, his motives for killing teacher Amy Masterson, and the kidnapping of Megan Rhodes. We go back live to join reporter Allison Peretsky, who has been at the scene since law enforcement officials arrived.
Alex answers the phone.
Please. I want to go home.
Hello?
On the other end, Sanji turns off the tape recorder.
You tuned into me, Dr. Cross?
Gary Sanji?
That'll do for now.
Alex puts down the remote.
How'd you get this number?
He records the call.
Unlisted numbers. Come on, Alex. There's no such thing. It's all out there in the air. You just have to know how to grab it.
Hey, how do you feel about my kidnapping being bigger news than your little tragedy there with Jim Galway?
You know, you really ought to give an interview about what happened that night.
You know what they say about sharing your pain? It's
very cathartic.
Thanks, but I'm doing okay.
Well, see, now that's good to hear. That's very good. I thought for a while there you wouldn't be able to get your act back together, and that would be a great shame.
I've been planning for a long, long time to involve you in the favor, little Miss Muffet.
Megan. Do you have trouble saying her name?
First name, of course. Hostage negotiators 101. Now, come on, Alex. You can do better than that, can't you?
What makes you think I'm interested?
They say that when I die, the case will die. They say it will be like a book I close.
But the book, it will never close.
Alex shakes his head and shrugs.
Very poetic. What the hell is it?
I've left you something for your visit with the roses tonight. You'll find it in your cold,
corrugated mailbox.
It's time to get back to work, Dr. Cross.
Alex puts down the phone, then turns off the tape recorder attached to the line. He runs outside to his metal mailbox. Alex scans the sunny residential neighborhood. A woman and child amble hand in hand down the sidewalk. Alex opens his mailbox. Inside sits a black and red high-top sneaker. As Alex holds it up by its laces, his gaze drifts. Alex drives, listening to his tape conversation. He sets the tape recorder aside and stares thoughtfully out the windshield. Later, his black Porsche turns into a driveway. In the blocked-off street, police hold back reporters and photographers. Alex shows his badge to a man in a dark suit.
Sorry, detective, this is a federal case.
Alex shows the high top in an evidence bag.
I've been invited.
The agent uses a walkie-talkie.
We have a detective down here, and they have a piece of evidence pertinent to the case. Which we
Alex?
A man in a trench coat approaches.
Special Agent Craig. Well, I'll be.
Alex shakes hands with a lantern-jawed man.
Dare I ask?
Alex gives him the high top.
My mailbox. Anything else?
Alex offers his tape recorder.
That'll get you inside.
Craig leads Alex into a mansion.
Terry, get this MacArthur.
Craig hands off the high top.
Who's in charge?
Holly MacArthur. Pedigree creepy. Made his bones busting wackos in the Seattle office.
Sanji, clean?
Clean, squeaky. Fibers look generic, fingerprints knotted. The whole school's a damn forensic vacuum. All he left us was one very neatly strangled teacher. Heads are gonna roll with the Secret Service.
Alex notices Jesse sitting on a couch.
Huh. Jesse Flanagan, Alex Cross. Agent Flanagan was in charge of the Secret Service detail at Cathedral.
Dr. Cross.
Agent Flanagan.
I've read your books on profiling. Obviously not close enough, but...
A clean-cut man approaches.
Kyle, this shoe is ID'd by the roses. It's Megan's.
Dr. Alex Cross, special agent in charge.
Oliver MacArthur.
How do you do, sir? Alex, I'll catch you later.
Forensics.
Yes, sir.
MacArthur faces Alex.
Senator and Mrs. Rose are through here. So before we talk to them, you got any idea why Sonji is involving you?
Not at all.
Swear.
Excuse me. Shouldn't Agent Flanagan be in the room with us?
Not a good idea. Miss Flanagan is not welcome.
But she's a material witness.
She failed the roses. And she failed the service.
I think Agent MacArthur has a point.
No, he's missing the point. You saw Sonji every day, 5 days a week, for how long?
2 years.
You have no idea how much you know about this case.
As Alex faces MacArthur, Jesse's gaze shifts back and forth between them.
Agent Flanagan.
He nods toward a doorway, then leads Alex and Jesse inside. Now the tape recorder plays.
They say that when I die, the case will die. They say it will be like a book I close. But the book, it will never close.
Very poetic. What the hell is it?
I've left you something here. Visit with the roses tonight. You'll find it in your cold, corrugated mailbox.
A On a couch, a man with a shiny forehead sits listening by a demure petite woman.
Well, for what it's worth, that's Sanji. His speech pattern's the same.
Is he, are we dealing with a sex maniac? Someone who might, you know...
MacArthur and Alex trade glances.
No, sir. This man has no such interest in your daughter. She's merely a means to an end.
What do you mean?
I see no standard procedure in anything he's done.
What did he mean about the book? That it will never close?
I honestly don't know. Well, I think I do. I'll tell you what this Gary Sanji is up to. The last thing he wants is good crisis management. What he wants is to confuse. Rancor, mixed signals, disorientation, those are his tools. So he calls a local cop, a damaged cop shouldering some heavy baggage. He's using Dr. Cross as his messenger.
Excuse me. The man that kidnapped our daughter didn't call you. So your agenda is what? To insult the man he did call?
Mrs. Rose, I never intend...
No, you wait a second. A madman has our daughter, and for some reason he contacted this man.
She points to Alex.
Do you know why?
Her eyes well with tears.
No, ma'am. Not yet.
Mrs. Rose glances at her husband, who gazes back empathetically. While the sea dreamer floats in darkness, its reflection shimmering on the black water. In her cell, Megan awakens. As she sits up groggily, we see a view of her on a black and white monitor. The gaunt, clean-shaven Sanji watches. Blinking, Megan spots the camera mounted near the ceiling. At the helm, Sanji wears a grim scowl. At the Rose Mansion, Jesse sits on a couch, twirling a pack of cigarettes in her fingers.
Hello.
She looks up at Alex.
Are you okay?
You,
Her lips tremble in a feeble grin.
Got any tips for helpless situations?
Well, you could smoke a carton a day. Or you could bounce back.
Yeah, well, I don't see anywhere to bounce to.
Like to get out of here?
Jesse flashes a smile, then nods tearfully. Later, Alex's Porsche heads away from the Capitol Dome. Jesse rides in the passenger seat.
Can I ask you something?
Alex glances at her as he drives.
Sure.
What did MacArthur mean when he referred to you as damaged?
Last summer, I let a sting operation get out of control. My partner was killed.
Jesse gazes at him thoughtfully. On the Sea Dreamer, Sanji removes a tea kettle from a stove's gas burner and fills a mug. In her cell, Megan sits on the mattress. The door opens. Sanji brings her clean clothes and a new pair of sneakers.
Hello, Megan. How are you?
Megan recoils against the padded wall.
Lovely to see you.
He sets down the clothes.
Do you recognize my voice?
Megan glances up blankly as he shuts the door behind him.
It's me.
He grins and sits facing her.
Mr. Sanji.
Megan eyes him warily.
He brought you that lovely cup of tea with honey. You know, your throat's sore, it'll make you feel better.
Megan takes the mug and sips.
It's all right. You have nothing to be scared of, Megan.
I'm not scared.
Good. But you're wondering what's going on.
I know what's going on. You're a kidnapper and you're a sick weirdo.
Sanji grins and shakes his head.
Megan, you're the most opinionated girl in my class. Think you got that from your mom?
I want to go home.
You go. Just promise me you're going to behave yourself. Okay? So, now listen. If you need to use the bathroom or anything at all, just press that.
He points to an intercom button.
I want to go home. Now.
Oh, look, I brought you some fresh clothes.
Please! Mr. Sanji, please!
Now in Jesse's apartment, Alex aims a rifle.
This is a fine gun.
It's Turkish. Handmade, 1924.
That is nice.
My daddy won it in a game of poker. Aces and eights.
Dead man's hand.
Jesse shrugs.
That's about as much as I know about my father. Have a seat.
Crime scene photos lay spread out on the table. Alex picks one up of Amy's body.
Do you know of any relationship between Amy Mass's son and Sonji?
Amy, no way. Why do you ask?
He strangled her. It's an act of passion.
He peers at a photo of the bearded Sonji.
That's a demonstration of will. A message.
He lays the photo in front of Jesse.
Take me seriously. What do you see?
Dr. Cross.
Alex.
Alex. Women's intuition, third eye, sixth sense. Whatever it is, I don't have it.
Sure you do. You just don't look at it right.
He covers half the face.
Every face has two aspects. I'll try looking at it down the middle, one side at a time. Did you say this man was confident?
Yeah.
Narcissistic?
I wouldn't know.
You ever see any flashes of hatred?
No.
Anger?
No.
Hostility?
No.
Alex gazes at her thoughtfully. Jesse studies his expression, then sits back in her chair.
What do you see?
Alex picks up Sonji's photo.
I see.
No, I mean about me. What do you see about me? And that's why you're here, isn't it?
Alex shifts his gaze from the blonde woman to the kidnapper's photo.
I see that you're about to start an argument.
Well, I need to help get her back.
What makes you think I want a partner?
You don't.
That's right.
Can I tell you why I don't care?
Alex folds his arms.
Sure.
Jesse leans forward, folds her hands on the table, and stares thoughtfully.
Look. When I was assigned to Cathedral, it was a job I didn't want. It's a far cry from working rope lines or flying Air Force One, but I have been there for 3 years. I have been responsible for Megan for 3 years. And that little girl means more to me than even a partner. Can you understand that?
Alex gazes at her, then lifts his eyebrows.
I suppose so. But even if I say no anyway, you'll probably just follow me around wherever I go.
Jesse smiles, then nods.
So, if there's a choice between having you as a partner or as a stalker, I guess I'll take my chances with a partner.
She smiles, nods, and cocks her head.
Thank you.
Time. At Cathedral School's security checkpoint, police barricades block the driveway. By, Jesse points beyond them as she faces Alex.
Student drop-off is there. That's my morning post. Student sign-in. Cameras are there, 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 and there. Motion sensors all around the periphery.
Foolproof way to keep the kooks out.
Exactly. We were always looking in the wrong direction.
Which door did he go out?
That one there. It's a straight shot to his parking space.
Alex gazes at the parking area, then nods toward the school.
Let's go in.
In Sonji's classroom, MacArthur and his team gather by the computer on Megan's desk. Black and white photos of historical figures decorate the walls.
His classroom.
An agent nudges MacArthur.
He was teaching the kids how everything on the internet is connected.
Alex, you got a sec?
Sure.
The two men step aside.
Listen, I think turf wars are a total waste of time. If I was out of line last night, I apologize.
Alex smiles.
Don't. I've been there.
MacArthur eyes him soberly.
Hey, anything you need, let me know, huh?
Sure, Meg.
MacArthur heads off.
Dr. Cross, you might want to see this.
Alex looks to a woman seated at a computer desk. He and Jesse approach.
This is Megan's desk?
Yeah.
He peers at images on the screen.
What are you doing?
Scoping GIFs, graphic interchange formats. They're all Stego encrypted. Somewhere among the billions of zeros and ones making up this image is a string of text.
Oh, I know about this. It's the cutting-edge method of passing notes in class. It's driving the teachers nuts.
How long before you can access it?
Oh, try never. You don't crack Stego without a password.
Alex faces Jesse.
You take me to his office.
As they head off, the computer expert keeps working.
But when you find Sonji, ask him for the password. He planted a monitoring virus on the girl's hard drive. Every keystroke Megan hit, Sonji was recording it.
In the hallway, Alex and Jesse pass dozens of police officers and FBI agents.
It's a good move, Jez. Angling for a position with the DCPD? I like that.
Dr. Cross, Agent Ben Devine. Agent Devine is security system supervisor.
The men shake hands.
Well, for now. We're going to be thrown to the wolves as soon as they find Megan Rose dead in a ditch.
Now, what makes you so sure that's what's going to happen?
Me getting fired or the girl in a ditch?
Alex stares at him.
Sorry. Having a pessimistic day.
Tell me. Sonji, did he... Did he ever show any interest in what you do? How you do it?
The man never talked to me. I never talked to him.
Well, thanks for your time.
Alex and Jesse head off. In Sonji's office, an investigator photographs an outline of Amy's body taped on the floor and labeled with numbers. Alex glances around the office. Jesse follows him as he puts on gloves and approaches a workbench covered with cables, circuitry, and computer cleaning supplies. Varying tools lie on the bench, and little plastic drawers fill a bank of storage racks. Alex's gaze shifts to Sonji's desk. A replica of Rodin's The Thinker and a magnifying glass rest near some books and a phone. Alex glances around the room. His gaze fixes on a far corner.
Hello?
Lightning flashes as he crosses the room.
What?
Alex points.
What do you think that is?
She follows his thoughtful gaze to an empty picture frame.
An empty frame?
He scans the room.
Otherwise known as...
Several paintings hang on the wood-paneled walls.
A missing picture.
Now, on a computer screen, security footage shows a view of the classroom sweeping jerkily left and right. Photos of famous personalities decorate the room's bulletin boards. Alex and the others watch the footage. Behind him, Alex glances toward photos of Winston Churchill, Mahatma Gandhi, and Oprah Winfrey. He scans past Liz Taylor, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Will Smith.
Okay. You want to something?
Another bulletin board shows a wide-eyed Einstein with his tongue out, Abraham Lincoln, and Queen Elizabeth. The space beside the Queen's portrait is empty. On the security footage, the same bulletin board shows a portrait of Lindbergh beside the Queen.
A missing picture.
They gaze at the screen.
Ah, Mr. Sonji has a sense of humor.
MacArthur approaches.
He didn't just kidnap a little girl, he turned it into a game.
FBI agents gather around as Alex leans forward.
Let's see what you know, Mr. Lindbergh.
He moves the mouse and zooms in on Lindbergh's image. He clicks on the aviator's lips and a new window opens.
My, my.
What do you got?
Dr. Cross isn't in cyberspace anymore. You're at a live site, looking through a video camera. Those arrows down there, move it.
Alex clicks on an arrow. The view pulls back, revealing a collage on a brick wall beside a bookshelf.
Where are we?
I would guess we're in Sonja's home. Now we're supposed to find out where that is.
MacArthur uses his cell phone.
Oliver MacArthur's office.
Yeah, it's me. Hold on.
Alex shifts the remote camera's angle. The view scans past a wooden desk to a bureau. Half hidden behind an antique, a framed certificate comes into view.
Oh, cool.
Can you zoom in there?
As Alex zooms in, the calligraphy name increases in size.
Jonathan M...
E... M-E... M-E... L...
You can't move that around, can you? Stationary. Go back.
They shift the view to an oval mirror, which clearly reflects a prescription bottle's label. Alex zooms in.
Focus. There.
Bingo. M-E-R...
Merck. Procusio. M-E-R-C-U-S-I-O.
1432-35 Granville. Gary Sonji is also known as Mercutio Jonathan, 1435 Granville Street. Well done, Alex.
MacArthur heads out. As Jesse lets out a relieved breath, Alex peers off, deep in thought. Now, helmeted and mylar-clad FBI agents knock open a door. They rush inside with rifles raised. MacArthur's team follows.
There.
He points and leads his men through the house. Alex and Jesse follow in their trench coats. Paintings and antiques decorate the spacious brick-walled apartment. Alex peers up at a loft. Persian rugs drape its metal railing. Technicians pour through the door, unpack field kits, and go to work. Alex and Jesse climb the stairs. Alex puts on latex gloves as they approach a collage consisting of photos and newspaper clippings tacked up on a corkboard. Alex peers up at multiple images of Charles Lindbergh in his plane, The Spirit of St. Louis. Another section of the collage shows Megan with classmates at Cathedral and with her parents in a family photo. Next to Alex, Jesse studies another section of the collage that shows photos of Divine and Cathedral security cameras. A schematic of the school's floor plan bears red arrows marking Sonji's escape route.
Imagine the patience, the dedication.
You sound like an admirer.
Alex lowers his gaze to books on a shelf.
Well, he's...
He peers at the titles.
It's like a spider.
Two books bearing the author name of Cross flank a third book.
I happen to like spiders.
He removes a book entitled Master Kidnapper, The Hauptmann Story.
He's got an elaborate setup here, boss. You want to see how he stayed clean at school?
An investigator places his palm into a plastic hand moulage.
He laminates a plastic veneer over your hands. Look at this.
He holds up a flesh-colored flap.
Foam rubber. Looks like he was wearing prosthetic appliances.
Nighttime. On his boat, Sonji watches TV.
I understand the Secret Service are being cautious tonight. There's speculation that a full investigation is underway.
Bright lights flood through the cabin window. Sonji peers out at an approaching boat. As it motors closer, he turns off the TV. In her cell, Megan lifts her head off the pillow and sits up on the mattress. On the video monitor, Sonji watches her put her ear to the padded walls. He turns off the monitor, slips a gun into his jacket pocket, and goes on deck. He faces the Coast Guard officers.
Hey, Meg!
Megan beats the padded wall.
Help! Help me!
You got a Rule 21 problem. No running lights.
Sonji peers over the rail.
Again? I just replaced the fuses yesterday.
Help! Help!
Sir, no running lights. You're gonna have to follow us in.
Help! Please, help me!
Well... Let me see what I can do with the fuse box. Hold on.
Sonji descends into the cabin. Megan uses the intercom.
I'm in here! Help me!
Sonji turns off the intercom.
Help!
He opens a panel and throws a circuit breaker. On the Sea Dreamer's hull, a light goes on. Sonji returns to the deck and faces the Coast Guard officer.
How's that?
The officer nods and the Coast Guard boat takes off.
Thanks a lot, fellas.
Sonji goes below.
Help! Help me, please!
Megan leans against the padded wall. In the pilot's cabin, Sonji turns on the monitor and puts the boat in motion. Below, Megan bangs a fist on the padding.
Help me, please!
Tears collect under her eyes.
Help me!
Now in the senator's mansion, Alex reads from the Hauptmann book to Jesse, MacArthur, the senator, and Mrs. Rose.
And before the hood was pulled over his head, he bragged to his executioner. They think that when I die, the case will die. They think it will be like a book I close. But the book, it will never close. Sonji was quoting the final words of Richard Bruno Hauptmann.
He hands Mrs. Rose the book. The senator looks away.
I'm sorry I don't follow.
1932. The infant son of Charles Lindbergh, America's greatest hero, was kidnapped.
I believe that Sonja wants to do the same thing.
You think we're dealing with a copycat?
Something like that.
Dr. Cross.
Mrs. Rose stands.
What does he want from you?
Alex thoughtfully lowers his eyes and paces.
He's brought me in and left this trail because he wants me to make sure that he's properly appreciated.
Mrs. Rose shakes her head.
But in order for him to achieve this, he has to kill me.
No, not necessarily. The death of the Lindbergh baby was accidental. Nevertheless, it's critical that we pull his strings. The more we make him a living legend, the more likely he is to keep Megan alive.
Now in front of the Department of Justice.
What can you tell us about Gary Sonji?
I can tell you that Sonji is very determined, obviously highly capable, and we consider him a serious adversary.
On his boat, Sonji watches the broadcast.
Megan Rose is Gary Sonji's ace. As long as he has her, he's in control.
Sonji turns on the burner under the tea kettle. In the cell, Megan listens at her door, then moves to the intercom. She opens its housing and loosens its battery pack. In the cabin, Sonji sits facing the TV.
Sir, would you assign as many agents to this case if she wasn't a senator's daughter?
The size of our task force is a reflection of who Gary Sonji is, not Megan Rose.
Megan activates the intercom.
Mr. Sonji?
You can parse the words if you like.
Hello?
I need to go to the bathroom.
Can you elaborate? All right. Be right there.
No.
Megan rips out the battery pack and nervously clips the intercom's housing back on. Sonji goes below. In her cell, Megan stands facing the door, then quickly grabs her tea mug off the mattress. Sonji opens her door, and the girl walks to the kitchen area, putting her mug in the sink. As Sonji sits at his laptop, Megan turns to the lit burner, palming the battery pack. She quickly tosses the battery pack into the burner's blue flames and goes into the bathroom. She lifts the toilet stool lid, then presses her ear to the door. Megan pulls back the curtain on the bathroom window. Through a metal grating, she spots a fisherman casting his line on the shore. In the cabin, Sonji types a message on his computer. You're the only one I can trust. As the battery pack casing buckles and blackens on the stovetop, Megan puts her ear to the bathroom door.
Come on.
On the stove burner, smoke as thick as cream pours from the battery pack. Sonji's attention remains pinned to his computer.
Come on.
The middle battery in the pack ignites. Sonji jumps as flames spread across the counter. Smoke billows upward. Sonji grabs a fire extinguisher. The blaze flares toward the ceiling. Megan covers her mouth and dashes out into the smoke-filled cabin.
Hey!
She runs up the stairway onto the deck and leaps over the rail. She swims frantically.
Help!
Sonji continues to fight the fire.
Please! Help!
Megan swims toward shore. On shore, the fisherman adjusts his tape player's earphones. In the cabin, the spray from Sonji's fire extinguisher douses the flames. He races above deck.
Help me! Please!
The fisherman sees Megan. Sonji rushes on deck and starts the engines. As Megan swims frantically, the fisherman rushes into the water toward her. Sonji mans the throttle.
Please!
The Sea Dreamer barrels toward shore.
Help! Help!
Hold on!
A bullet hits the fisherman. Sonji shoots him again.
Oh, please!
The fisherman's body floats in front of Megan. Sonji reaches for a gaff.
Please! No!
He hooks Megan's sweatshirt with the gaff and pulls her onto the boat.
Oh, please!
He sits with the soaking wet girl and covers her with his jacket.
So keep it warm. Hiccups. Megan, you promised me you were going to behave yourself. Because of you, what you've done, that man is dead.
In his arms, Megan shudders.
No. Promise me. Promise me you're going to be a good little girl, okay? Say yes, Mr. Sonji.
Megan shudders, her head turned away.
Say yes, Mr. Sonji.
Yes, Mr. Sonji.
Sonji nods.
Let's go have a cup of tea.
Now on a road between plowed fields, a black SUV blazes along, leaving a cloud of dust in its wake. It speeds toward police cars parked on the dirt road shoulder. It's Jesse and Alex. Jesse parks the SUV between two cruisers. As they get out, Alex shows his badge to a trooper and accompanies Jesse toward the crime scene. They head toward the water's edge, where troopers comb the grassy shore. Beside the salt marsh, an investigator peers down at the dead fisherman's pale face. An old fisherman looks on.
I'd say 8 hours, about 9 a.m. Slugs are large caliber. Shots hit him here, here. Kill shot tapped him, crowned ahead.
This here's Thomas Matthias. He found all this way.
Thomas, the old fisherman, follows the investigators. A trooper leads Alex and Jesse to a numbered marker. Beside it, a fleece vest bears a cathedral school patch on its back. Alex picks up the wet garment, checks the collar, and shows it to Jesse. She nods. The tag on the inside reads, Megan Rose. Now, offshore, a police boat idles on the water. Two scuba divers roll backwards off the side. As Jesse gazes soberly at the operation, Alex approaches her.
She's not in the water, Jesse. Sonja still has her.
There's no way of knowing that.
Well, think about it. Megan is precious cargo. Sonja's not gonna let some twist of fate bring her harm. Right?
Jesse nods and stares off.
But why Megan? Why her?
Alex gazes thoughtfully. Behind him, an FBI agent uses a cell phone as he faces a police trooper. Alex starts off.
Where are you going?
Back to the city. We're talking a car.
They walk through tall cattails, now on a highway.
You ask why Megan? That's the question you should have been asking right from the start. Why Megan?
Jesse stares at Alex.
Who is Senator Hank Rose? Nobody. Most people don't even know who he is. Never heard of him. Couldn't pick him out of a lineup. This case is front page news now. Where will it be in 2 months? A year? Oblivion. Know why? Because Senator Hank Rose is no Charles Lindbergh.
Well, okay, then who is?
Ah. There's the troublesome question.
Nighttime. Rain pours down on two guards at an iron gate. Behind them, a lightning flash brightens the exterior of a stately mansion. Inside, Dimitri sits at a computer in his bedroom. Our view creeps slowly toward a closed door. Dimitri tightens his lips as windows pop up on the computer screen. We move in closer to the closed door's brass knob. A man's hand reaches out and turns it. Dimitri faces the door as his bodyguard peers in.
Нормально, Дим?
Да.
Спокойной ночи.
Спокойной ночи.
As the agent closes the door, Dimitri peers over his shoulder. Looking back to his computer, the boy quickly types. Words appear under an encrypted photo. Dimitri, you're the only one I can trust. Sonji has helpers. Trust no one. Dimitri writes back using a picture of Michael Jordan. Downstairs, Alex and Jesse stand by as the bodyguard confers with the colleague.
Владимир Иванович,
mm-hmm.
Я проверил. Все в порядке.
Спасибо.
The colleague faces Alex and Jesse.
Dr. Cross, Agent Flanagan, we appreciate your concern, but Dmitry is fine. And our security services are more than capable of protecting the son of the Russian president.
Can we at least talk to him?
Nothing would please us more than to be of help. But speaking to Dmitry right now would be inappropriate.
Thanks for your time.
Alex taps Jesse's arm and she follows him toward the door. A man hands Alex a long umbrella. In a car, Sonji types on a laptop. An encrypted message appears on Dimitri's screen. Can you get to public phone outside embassy? Dimitri replies, yes, I have a way. Call who? In the car, Sonji types. Now, Alex and Jesse cross the street under Alex's umbrella. As they reach their SUV, Jesse faces Alex and glances at the embassy.
What?
Well, MacArthur's dragnetting the bay, right? And, I mean, he's not really missing us, so I was thinking maybe we could just stick around and, you know, scope out the place a bit.
Agent Flanagan, are you suggesting a stakeout here?
Inside, we peer around an open door at a security desk. Dimitri's bodyguard smokes as he watches two monitors. Dimitri watches from his bedroom doorway as the man puts out his cigarette and leaves his post. Dimitri carefully closes the bedroom door and hurries to the security desk. The boy counts to himself as one monitor's view scans a rain-soaked courtyard. Wearing a blue jacket, Dimitri runs along a hall. As he disappears down a flight of stairs, the bodyguard emerges from an adjacent doorway. In the SUV, Jesse stares out the rain-streaked window. She glances at Alex, who gazes serenely out his.
I get the feeling you've done this a lot.
Oh, yeah. Every chance I get. Especially when it's cold and wet.
He removes his scarf and throws it down on the seat beside him. A police cruiser pulls up next to their parked SUV, and an officer in the passenger seat rolls down his window. Jesse shows her badge.
No parking here.
We're on the clock, officer.
Everything okay?
Everything's all right.
The officers nod and drive away. Alex sinks back into his seat as Jesse rolls up the window. Now, in a damp corridor, Dimitri walks purposefully, holding a flashlight. Fluorescent lights glow along the cinder block walls, and large pipes line the ceiling. Outside, the police cruiser curves around a bend. A policeman with a plastic rain cover over his hat waves them down.
What's the problem?
Sonji shoots them both in the head. Meanwhile, in the damp corridor, Dimitri approaches a corroded gate. Nervously glancing over his shoulder, he unlocks it. In the SUV, Jesse bites her fingernails.
Go ahead, Jesse.
What?
Alex glances at her, then rolls his head toward his window.
Have one.
Thank you.
Jesse puts a cigarette in her mouth and lights it. Behind them, the police cruiser slowly makes its way up the road. Alex lifts his head, his eyes focused toward a side-view mirror. As the cruiser pulls toward the curb several yards from a phone booth, Alex furrows his brow. Now, Sonji parks the cruiser near the sidewalk. One of the dead officers leans in the passenger seat. Meanwhile, Dimitri pockets his keys and approaches a security keypad. He punches in a code. He inches open a reinforced door and peers out at the rainy courtyard. A security camera outside swivels away from the door. On the street, the cruiser's headlights go out. Alex narrows his eyes. At the reinforced door, Dimitri studies the camera. Dimitri races across the courtyard and ducks behind a tree. He hurries around the building. In the SUV, Jesse spots him running toward the street.
Alex, that's Dimitri.
Alex looks over his shoulder. Dimitri cautiously looks around as he approaches the phone booth. Lowering his hood, he takes a piece of paper from his pocket. Sonji watches from the cruiser, then puts on his plastic-covered policeman's hat. In the SUV, Alex and Jesse watch intently. In the phone booth, Dimitri removes the receiver from its cradle. Now, the cruiser's driver's side door opens and Sonji gets out. In the SUV, patterns of falling rain shine on Alex's watchful face. As Dimitri dials, Sonji advances. Lightning flashes on his pale complexion.
Jesse. It's him. It's him!
As Jesse speeds into a U-turn, the SUV goes up on the sidewalk. With a hand on his holster, Sonji nears the phone booth. As the SUV speeds toward Sonji, he squints against its bright headlights. He bolts back toward the cruiser. The SUV halts. Alex and Jesse spring out, crouch behind their open doors, and draw their guns.
Sonji! Hold it right there!
Behind the cruiser door, Sonji fires at the detectives. Jesse ducks, and Sonji gets into the cruiser. Jesse aims. Sonji backs away. Jesse shoots a couple of rounds and Alex fires too. A bullet blows out one of the cruiser's tires and the car careens backwards over a fire hydrant. As water explodes from the fixture, Jesse runs into the street. The cruiser's tires spin in the mud. Jesse stops and aims her gun as the cruiser speeds away. Embassy guards surround her and Alex. The rim of the blown-out tire sparks as the cruiser escapes. Jesse holds up her hands and gives her gun to a guard. Alex watches Sonji get away. Now, reporters gather outside police barricades in the street. On the other side, Jesse and Alex watch two men converse. Jesse goes to the embassy gate. Dimitri peers at her through the wrought iron bars.
You're going to get Megan back, right?
Yes, we are, I promise.
Use this to get Mr. Sonji.
He hands her a pocket knife.
I will. Thank you.
They lock pinky fingers. Now Alex and Jesse approach MacArthur.
You talk to Hal. I want you to bring him up to speed. Well done, guys. Avert an international crisis and paint Sonji into a corner. Not bad for a night's work.
Incoming. Sonji ditched a patrol car near Reno Park. Hijacked a tan Sierra. Put one bullet in the driver's head. Last seen heading toward Route 50.
Annapolis. I knew it. 75,000 boats. Other marinas?
We're here. Dead fishermen here. These, all the marinas. All locked down. Patrol boats in each of them.
All right. Listen up. We gotta move fast. Roadblock Route 50 and triple the surveillance on the harbors. I want two choppers on the pad in 5 minutes. Let's go.
Meanwhile, Sonji arrives on the Sea Dreamer. He pulls his gun from a rumpled coat, then angrily throws the garment. Leaning his palms on a table, he shivers. Rain soaks his short hair in his blue policeman shirt. Taking deep breaths, he swallows hard. His eyes slowly shift. As he lifts his gaze, his mouth hangs open. He takes his gun from the table and cocks it. Now inside Megan's cell, the padded door shakes a little. Sonji yanks it open and aims his gun toward the mattress. His eyes widen and he lowers the weapon. His panicked gaze stays frozen as his chest heaves with short breaths. Megan is gone. Sonji looks over his shoulder and shifts uneasily. Heading back to the cabin, he slams the door. Morning. Policemen stand guard outside the senator's mansion. Inside, Jessie sits at an empty dining table with her arms folded. Alex enters and takes a seat beside her. Folding his hands on the polished tabletop, he gazes at Jessie. She stares straight ahead.
What's wrong?
Jessie glances at him and rocks slightly.
I blew it, that's what's wrong. I had a shot right before he hit the hydrant. But instead of pulling the trigger, I was thinking. I was thinking!
Yeah, you were thinking the possibility of a shot going astray and blowing Sonja's head off, in which case...
We would never find Megan, I know that.
Well then, don't beat yourself up for being prudent.
Alex, you don't get it. I was trained to shoot first and think later,
and I... For heaven's sake. If you hadn't convinced me to stay there, Sonja would have two victims instead of one, plus we'd have an international incident on our hands. You did good.
Yes, but still, I...
You did... Good.
MacArthur takes a seat at the table.
Anything?
Oh, not yet. We're sitting on the area.
Chief, Sanji's on the phone.
They all hurry into an adjoining living room where dozens of FBI agents gather around monitoring equipment. The Roses enter from another room as Alex leans into a microphone next to a speaker.
Sanji?
Detective Cross, I'm going to explain how the agenda has changed. You're going to bring me 10 million in diamonds, 0.5 carat, color D, clarity SI2, in a thermos, 9 hours. If the stones are rigged, laser tagged, irradiated, the girl dies. Does that penetrate?
It does.
I'll call back. 4 p.m. sharp.
MacArthur faces the computer expert.
He beat the trace.
Now hundreds of diamonds sparkle on a tray lined with black velvet. A bespectacled man gently funnels them into a slender steel thermos. Now, the microphone and speaker sit in a large, busy office. As agents gather around, the computer expert pushes a button.
Dr. Cross.
I'm here.
The Watergate. 20 minutes. This package from Mr. Antwerp.
Alex checks his watch.
Okay, people, let's move.
Now in a parking garage, Jessie holds the thermos.
Don't lose me, kiddo.
You won't even see me.
She hands it to Alex, and she and the other agents head towards some parked cars. A man opens Alex's Porsche door for him, and the detective gets in the driver's seat. As he drives out of the garage, several unmarked sedans and SUVs follow. Some pass straight through an intersection as others take left and right turns. Alex's Porsche speeds down a slick city street past the curved Watergate Hotel. Alex pulls past a limo to a valet. The valet opens his door and Alex gets out, showing his badge.
I'm on police business. See what you're doing.
Eddie, this way.
As Alex crosses the lobby's checkered floor, he glimpses a man walking in the opposite direction. Pocketing his gloves, Alex faces a clerk at the front desk.
Hi, how are you?
Paper packets from Mr. Antwerp.
Yes.
Alex watches anxiously as the woman sorts through envelopes.
Yes, sir.
His eyes dart behind her. He points to a stack of boxes.
Over there, that.
The clerk lifts a neatly wrapped parcel off the top of the pile and frowns at a sloppily sealed box. She carries it to Alex, who finds a cell phone inside.
Cross.
He leaves the phone and runs out.
Mac, you there?
Alex.
Hey,
made me ditch the car. Looks like it's a running game. I'm on my way to 6th and Pennsylvania.
As Alex jogs across the street, Jesse follows in the SUV.
Left and behind you, Alex.
Alex runs across the wet pavement and weaves between pedestrians on a brick sidewalk. He slows as he climbs two steps to a large round fountain. Pacing back and forth, Alex watches each passerby with an intense gaze. In the SUV, Jesse puts a finger to her ear.
Bearing on to Pennsylvania.
At the fountain, Alex stands a few feet from a payphone. He eyes it curiously, then answers it.
Ross.
12th and Madison. 12 minutes will get you there. Go.
Alex takes off. At FBI headquarters, MacArthur paces.
Unit 3, loop on 23rd Street. Unit 6, take K Street and double back.
Jesse makes a left turn.
You got four units on top, Alex.
On a city street corner, a payphone rings. Alex sprints as he draws near to it.
Cross.
4 minutes, Union Station, main entrance.
He hustles on.
Jesse.
Union Station, main entrance.
Jesse speeds around a car. MacArthur stares.
It's rush hour. He's drawn him into a crowd.
Now sweat dampens Alex's face and his breathing grows heavy as he jogs toward a train station. Inside, Alex stops a few feet past the entrance and looks around. As commuters bustle to and fro, Alex wipes his face with a handkerchief.
Your attention, please. Departing passenger.
Several yards away, a man standing by some payphones reads a newspaper. He reaches for one. Alex races over.
Hey! Hey! Don't answer that!
I think it's for me. Cross.
Alex leans on the payphone and mops his brow. His brow creases and his gaze lands a few feet away. He hurries to a trash can and picks through it. Finding a cell phone with an attached earpiece, he puts it on.
Cross.
Keep his phone. Take the metro. Platform A. You got 2 minutes. Go.
Alex takes off with the phone. Outside, Jesse parks in the street. Alex hustles down a stairwell to a subway platform. A departing train speeds out of sight as he arrives. Now, Jesse enters the station, shows her badge, and hurries on.
Cross.
Go to the center of the platform.
As Alex walks toward the center, Jesse jogs down some stairs. Clutching the thermos of diamonds in one hand and the phone in the other, Alex strides forward. As a train arrives, Alex looks over his shoulder and spots Jesse. On the other side of the platform, a second train arrives, heading in the opposite direction. Alex glances over his shoulder again. Jesse looks around.
Track 15, go.
Alex races to the train on his right. Jesse watches, then gets on too, a few cars down, just as the doors close. On board, Alex lets out a breath. Jesse starts down the center aisle. Alex warily takes in his surroundings as he holds onto a metal crossbar. As he surveys the passengers standing nearby, he puts a hand to his ear.
Go to the first car.
As Alex moves forward, the subway train emerges from a tunnel into bright daylight. In the first car, Alex steps toward the front. He passes a man reading and a young man in a leather jacket. Behind him, Jesse opens a door and enters from the adjacent subway car. She watches Alex walk forward.
You there yet?
Outside, a distant figure stands by the tracks.
Go to the left side. Open the window.
His window's not open.
You're smart, detective. Improvise. Quickly.
Alex shows his badge to passengers by the window.
Police officer. Everybody down!
Get down! Everybody down!
Come on, out of the way!
Looking away, Alex shoots a window.
You ready? All right, now, throw!
Alex tosses the thermos out of the broken window and it lands by the figure's feet. Wearing a black hood, the ransomer pockets it. Grimacing, Alex leans far out the window for a look at him. Ducking back inside, Alex glances down at his gun, then looks at Jesse. Outside the senator's mansion.
I that Gary Sonji was involved in the incident on the MTA train this morning.
We've heard rumors that a ransom was paid. Can you comment on this?
I can't comment on any of that.
What about Megan Rose?
I'm not going to go into any details at this time.
On the boat, Sanji watches the newscast.
I'm not going to comment on his mental stability. Draw your own conclusions.
Behind MacArthur, Alex and Mrs. Rose exchange a glance. Alex leaves with Jesse.
He's not going to answer any questions.
File on Sanji. Is it still on your kitchen table?
Yeah, why?
I'm going to have another look at it. This business about the diamonds. Money. I didn't see it coming.
On the Sea Dreamer, Sanji types at his laptop. Photos and statistics pop up on screen. One shows Agent Ben Devine. Another window pops up with Jesse's photo. Sanji glances at the TV press conference, then back at the laptop. Meanwhile, at Jesse's apartment, Alex and Jesse sit on the couch, looking through papers.
This is worse than killing time.
Yeah, but you'd be amazed at how often the small, neglected things become the most important. Just got a feeling we are missing something.
Maybe I'm in the wrong line of work. Maybe I should take on something less challenging.
You do what you are, Jesse.
You mean you are what you do?
No, I mean you do what you are. You're born with a gift. If not that, then you get good at something along the way. And what you're good at, you don't take for granted.
Jesse's eyes shift thoughtfully. They look toward the door. Jesse rises.
Who is it?
As she opens the door, Sanji shocks her chest with a handheld taser. She falls, and Alex and Sanji aim their guns at each other.
Gary Sanji.
Hi, Alex. Right hand, thumb and forefinger. Just give me the gun.
Alex stands motionless, staring at the kidnapper.
Alex, you can't shoot me. You'll never find Megan.
Alex slowly takes the barrel of his gun in his free hand and holds out the butt end to Sanji. Pockets the taser and takes Alex's weapon.
Sit down, Alex.
Keeping his gaze locked on Sanji, Alex settles onto the couch. Takes a seat facing him.
I'm a little concerned, Alex. I'm a little worried that you don't really care to understand me anymore, that you won't paint an accurate portrait. And I need you to convince me that I'm wrong.
Well, in order to do that, we're going to have to talk about Megan Rose.
No bargaining, Alex. No cheap interrogation techniques. Transparent and clumsy. This is between me and you. I want you to see. I want you to look inside here and tell me what you see. I'm a gift to you, Alex. I'm a gift to you.
As he bends over in laughter, Alex shifts his eyes.
I see you've got your sense of humor back.
The detective nods.
I wondered what happened to it during the ransom drop.
Sanji shifts in the chair.
The ransom drop. It was a well-earned $12 million.
$12 million.
Senator Rose says he can pull strings. Says he can fix it so you keep the $12 million and walk. All you have to do is return the child. Where is Megan?
She's trapped in my boat, Alex. Isn't that right? Maybe she's stuck in a warehouse somewhere, floating in a river, swinging from the end of a rope, buried alive.
Alex stares at the nodding criminal.
I envy her.
The detective knits his brow.
What would life have been like with parents like that?
Come on, Gary. Blaming your parents for what you are.
Jesse opens her eyes.
I'm not blaming them, Alex. They've been punished already.
Sanji wipes a tear from his cheek.
I burned down the house while I slept.
On the floor, Jesse reaches into her pocket.
So, in your opinion, Doctor, were my actions triggered by nature or nurture?
If you want me to be brutally honest, I think you just have a morbid desire to burn in hell.
Alex stares into Sanji's eyes.
We're done for today. I'm taking her with me.
Sanji gets up. He grabs the back of Jessie's neck and lifts her to her feet in a chokehold.
You're not taking her anywhere.
I'll send her back to you. Just tell me which pace you want first.
Jessie stabs him in the leg with Dimitri's knife. Sanji smacks her in the face with his gun. As Alex ducks into a hallway grabbing the Turkish rifle, Sanji looks around.
Alex!
Alex steps out. Sanji aims. Alex shoots him. The blast knocks him into a wall. As Jessie flinches on the floor, Alex rushes to her. She cries as he helps her sit up. Alex brushes her hair out of her eyes and she focuses on Sanji.
What have you done?
Alex looks up.
What have you done?
Sanji lies motionless against the wall, his eyes open. Now outside.
Residents of this normally quiet suburb are still in shock as news of the shooting of Gary Sonji, who was America's most wanted man, filtered through their community. Apparently,
Sonji attempted to confront. In an SUV, MacArthur faces Alex with a tape recorder.
So he came after Jessie as payback for Dimitri. That's all you want on the record?
Yeah, for now.
As MacArthur turns off the recorder, Alex watches the senator and his wife pass through police lines.
Here they come.
The investigators get out of the vehicle and head toward the concerned couple.
Dr. Cross, tell me you have at least an idea where my little girl is.
I'm sorry, sir, I can't.
You kill the one man who has the answers, and you're telling me you haven't a clue? Not one clue. The man walked in the room and
Senator,
you shot him.
Standing in his shoes, I'd have done the same thing, sir.
Well, that's your job, not his. He's supposed to find my little girl, not shoot. The man knows where she is.
Senator.
As he storms away, Mrs. Rose locks her teary eyes on Alex. The detective stares at the ground.
It's not over.
He needs her gaze.
The book is not closed.
Mrs. Rose swallows hard, then turns away and joins her husband. Elsewhere, Jessie sits, holding a compress to her head. As a medic checks her eyes with a penlight, a gurney carries the covered dead body away. Alex approaches. Jessie glances at him with her wide, tearful eyes, then nods. She stands and faces him.
Alex. Thank you for saving my life.
Gladys.
She smiles and walks away. MacArthur steps up behind Alex and watches her go.
You want to hear something funny, Mac?
Sure. Cheer me up.
I congratulated Sanji on scoring $12 million.
I mean, $10
million. Alex faces him and raises his brow.
Exactly. He had no idea what I was talking about.
Now in a dark corner, a mouse nibbles something, then crawls through a hole in a wallboard. Nearby, Megan sits on a cot and stares across the dirty, rustic space. Her gaze follows rays of light on a chair up to a grate in the ceiling. A dark figure enters, carrying a tray. Megan watches the short-haired stranger and knits her brow.
I know you. You work at my school.
Divine glares at her.
Eat your food, Megan.
He leaves her. Megan looks around. As steam wafts from the meal, Megan holds a quizzical stare, then directs her attention to the tray. She picks up a silver fork and studies its tines. Now, at Cathedral, Alex pushes a button on his watch. He walks briskly down a flight of stairs, enters Sanji's classroom, and presses the button again. MacArthur follows the detective. Alex knits his brow, turns to him, and nods. MacArthur follows him out of the classroom and down the hall. Alex presses the button on his watch and stops in front of Sanji's office. MacArthur shifts his eyes between the watch and the office.
Alex, where is this going?
Alex glances up at a security camera. Now in the security room, the investigators watch the footage of Divine rushing out of the school.
We've been through these tapes backwards and forwards. I can't see how this is helping us find Megan.
Alex rewinds the tapes.
You know what I see, Mac? Someone was on the Sanji long before we ever heard of him. Look at this. What do you see?
Major Divine hauling ass out to the front gate.
Mac, he could have shut this whole place down from right there. Now, you want to tell me why he didn't?
MacArthur frowns grimly.
Devine was in on it with him. Then when Sonji hit the embassy, he pulled a double cross. He ran his own ransom.
No. Sonji was a loner. An accomplice would have been beneath him. But I'll tell you what happened. Sonji was hoodwinked.
MacArthur's eyes narrow.
And so are we.
On TV.
Details are still emerging, but this much is clear. The manhunt that began over a week ago in the nation's capital came to a violent end late yesterday.
Devine turns off the TV and looks around. Putting out a cigarette, he leans forward and grabs a gun from his holster. With his hands gripping the weapon tightly, Devine gets to his feet and scans the dark house. He cautiously steps forward. Knitting his brow, the kidnapper looks around again and checks behind his back. He returns the gun to the holster and heads back toward the TV.
Don't move.
Jesse holds a gun to his neck.
Turn around, hands on the wall, feet apart.
Hi, Jez. Where'd you come from?
You know something, Devine? You're pretty stupid. Your car in the driveway? The TV's so loud you wouldn't be able to hear a SWAT team come in.
What are you doing?
Shut up!
She places the pistol under his chin. As he hooks a brow, Jesse smiles. He caresses her face and they kiss. As they separate, Jesse licks her lips.
Where's Megan?
She's in the barn. She was so doped up, I don't think she even knew I took her off the boat.
She's still alive? You were supposed to dump her in the river after you got the diamonds.
Yeah, well, maybe killing a kid is something I'm not prepared to do on my own. Anyway, today, tomorrow, it's still gonna look like Sonji killed her.
She can't die after Sonji, you idiot.
It doesn't make any difference, you know why? They're never gonna find the body.
Breathing deeply, Jesse shifts her eyes.
Okay. I'll go do it now. Will that make you happy?
Yeah, it would. Wait.
Devine turns around. Jesse smiles.
Can I see them?
With a slight smile, Devine drops his gaze and nods. As he heads into another room, Jesse turns around. Still smiling, she twiddles her fingers.
Hey, do you realize that we spent an entire year following Sanji's every move? I think we deserve these.
Devine hands her the steel thermos. Jesse pours some diamonds into her palm.
That beats the hell out of a Secret Service pension, huh?
He kisses her head.
Profiling the profiler. Kidnap from the kidnapper, that's brilliant. You are a genius, Jess.
Genius has nothing to do with it. I'm just good at what I do.
Well, didn't hurt that everyone else involved was a complete halfwit.
You think Alex Cross is a halfwit? You really believe that he shot Sonji to save my life? Cross pulled the trigger because he knew Sonji didn't have Megan anymore.
Devine studies her.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that sooner or later he's going to figure it out. He already knows Sonji didn't run the ransom.
He's onto us already, isn't he?
No, he's not onto us.
Devine glances away.
But I think he's on to you.
Jesse shoots Devine in the head and he slides down a wood post. This gun raised, Alex bursts into Jesse's apartment. He paces into the empty living room and scans the dim space. Alex peers around a corner and checks the bedroom. He looks from side to side, eases his gun back into his holster, and steps around a nearby desk. Noticing a computer, the detective takes a seat and presses the power button. He lifts a day planner and flips through its pages. Alex glances at the monitor. A cursor flashes next to a box labeled password. The detective presses his lips together and strokes his mustache. At the farmhouse, Jesse tapes up Devine's plastic-wrapped body. She coolly looks the bundle over and tucks some of her loose blonde hair behind her ear. Standing up, Jesse places her gun in the waist of her pants and walks away. Back at her apartment, Alex examines a highlighted copy of his own book, Profiling Serial Murderers. He knits his brow and scans the apartment. On the fireplace mantel, a black and white photograph shows an elderly man in a straw hat. Another shows a little girl pouting. Alex gets to his feet and walks toward the mantel. He studies the photo of the elderly man who grips the Turkish rifle. Alex narrows his eyes, then directs his attention to some labeled evidence nearby. The rifle lies in a bag. In a flashback, Alex shoots Sanji.
It's Turkish. My daddy won it in a game of poker. That's about as much as I know about my father.
Alex rushes back to the desk and tries the password, aces and eights. He hits enter, and a window showing the computer's files opens on screen. Alex narrows his eyes, then clicks the mouse. A series of pop-up windows displays photos of Alex and his old partner. Alex clicks another folder, and pictures of Sanji appear, then photos of Megan. Next, he finds a real estate ad with a photo of a farmhouse. A caption reads, "Located in Taylorstown, Mead, Loudoun County." At the actual farmhouse, Jesse jogs down the front steps. Taking her pistol from her waistband, she strides past overgrown shrubs and across a driveway toward a barn. Now, in the back of a stall, Megan uses the tines of the fork to loosen a nail in the wall. She then shoves its flat handle between two boards and tries to pry it free. Now, Jesse calmly slides open the barn's main door and enters. Meanwhile, Megan keeps loosening the board. Jesse tucks her pistol in her waistband and opens a padlock on the stall door. Inside, Megan looks over her shoulder, then goes back to prying at the board. Jesse pushes against the stall door, but it doesn't budge. On the other side, the door bangs into the metal frame of Megan's cot, which is propped against it at an angle.
Megan? Megan, it's me, honey.
Jesse? Jesse! Jesse, I'm in here! Jesse!
Open up, honey. I'm gonna take you home. It's all over.
Yeah, sure. Just hold on a second.
As Megan starts to move the cot, Jesse smiles. Megan then leaves the cot alone and eyes the door.
Jesse?
Yeah, honey?
What happened to that other guy?
Jesse's eyes shift.
He's dead, Megan. You're safe now. Open up.
Jesse?
Yeah, honey?
Why isn't there anyone else with you?
Jesse licks her lips, then takes a calming breath.
Megan, it's me. And don't be scared of me. Open the door.
Keeping her wary gaze on the door, Megan backs away.
Megan, I'm gonna ask you one more time to open the door. Right now, open the door. Megan, open the door. Listen to me, open the door! Open it, bitch!
Jesse kicks the unmoving door, then fires her gun through the wallboards. Megan ducks behind a post. Jesse calmly lowers her weapon. In the stall, Megan looks over her shoulder with a tearful gaze. Now Jesse climbs a wooden ladder to a loft. Megan looks desperately toward the ceiling. Jesse readies her gun and steps toward an open grate in the floor. In the stall, Megan sees Jesse through the grate, then notices her dinner knife on the ground. She snatches it, climbs onto the cot, and stabs at a light bulb through a box of wire mesh. The bulb shatters and the stall goes dark. Jesse leans down to the grate.
Very clever, Megan.
Jesse turns on a flashlight and shines its beam through the grate. Megan rushes to the loose wallboard. She pries at it with both the fork and knife, then reaches her fingers in and pulls the board free. As she squeezes through the hole in the wall, Jesse fires at her. Unharmed, Megan hurries across a stall of hay. Jesse climbs down the ladder and strides forward, aiming her flashlight. As Megan backs into a stable, Alex grabs her from behind and covers her mouth. Furrowing her brow, Megan relaxes in his grip. Alex gazes around a tall hay bale and spots Jesse walking on the other side of a wooden railing. She methodically searches the dark barn, moving her flashlight from side to side. Alex leans back against the bale of hay as Jesse moves closer. Seeing Jesse start to retrace her own steps, he lets go of Megan. He takes his hand off of her mouth and turns her to face him. Alex puts a finger to his lips and motions for the girl to stay put. Megan nods, then watches the stranger creep away. As Jesse walks down the center of the barn, her eyes shift left and right. Alex steps out a few yards behind her.
Jesse?
He aims his gun. Jesse halts.
It's over. Drop the gun.
Jesse swallows and trembles a little.
Alex. How did you,
Ace is an ace, Jesse. Plus your timing was a little off.
She turns and faces him.
I watched the tapes. You and Divine could have stopped Sonji at the school. Just like you could have stopped him at the Russian embassy. But you had a different agenda.
You know something, Alex? When you said you do what you are, you were right. I'm living proof.
Put the gun down, Jesse.
Alex keeps his gun steady. Jesse blinks and shakes her head. Her eyes brim with tears.
Would you kill another partner?
You're not my partner.
Jesse's lips tighten and a tear rolls down her cheek. She lifts her gun. Alex shoots. Blood splatters Jesse's cheek. More blood pours from a wound in her chest. Her lips tremble. She drops. Alex stays frozen for a moment, then cautiously moves toward her, keeping his gun aimed. He passes through the beam of the flashlight still clutched in Jesse's hand and crouches beside her body. Watching her eyes, he moves her gun out of reach and checks her pulse at her throat. Her eyes stare off lifelessly. Frowning, Alex straightens. His jaw muscles clench tightly as he stares at her. Crouched in a corner, Megan looks up. Alex approaches. He keeps his gaze steadily upon her as he draws closer. Stopping a few feet away, he crouches before the young girl and gives her a faint smile.
You all right?
Megan nods.
You're a very brave girl, Megan.
Who are you?
I'm a policeman.
He tosses his badge to her.
My name is Alex Cross. I'm a friend of your parents.
Can you take me to them?
Nothing would give me greater pleasure.
He reaches out his arms. Megan gets up.
Could you... Thanks.
She takes his hand and helps pull him to his feet. Smiling, Alex puts his arm around Megan. Together, they walk out into the night air.
Respectable they are, the more they get away with it.
This is my community, and I am watching you.